Welcome to Hornfield. This is day nine of the stage three here at Hawke Street. Is it Mr. Wallace?
Yes, it is, yes.
Yes, yeah, I seem to recall seeing you before.
Yeah, I've been here a few times.
And so, Mr. Edgar, you're here for Mr. Wallace. That was your interest in the Minaret Station.
That's right, yeah.
And at least looks like a dozen others. So, over to you, but I wonder if the first item of business might be for us to ask Kat to pull up the map and for you to identify where each of these properties actually is. I know where Minaret Station is, I know where Mount Burke is, but Mr. Cheatham would probably benefit in particular from knowing where your clients are actually located around the Wanaka area.
Yep.
I think
it would be helpful to identify the specific areas. I'm not sure how to. Right.
Address. We don't have it. That's the problem. It's a real problem. We don't have we have no road access. So, but essentially, if you zoom in, the three properties which Scott is representing essentially take up the entire, if you move up a little bit, take up the entire western side of the lake, essentially from further up the lake, which is the Albert Berm, which is near Makarora, and it, keep going, and runs down the, about there, that's good, down the western side of the lake, from the top of the screen, right down to Minaret Creek, which is opposite Muwahu, which was previously called Pigeon Island. And then it becomes West Wanaka Station for the balance of the lake all the way to the Matuki River, which is where your cursor is. And then on the other side of the Matuki is Cattle Flat Station. And all of the western horizon from Wanaka was all originally pastoral lease land. It was settled in the mid-1800s. It was previously termed Wastelands of the Crown. So it was the last of the interior of the land to be settled, and it was done under license and lease. And in the in 1948, it was created into pastoral lease. And some of those properties have since been through tenure review, and so it's a mix of freehold and pastoral lease land. All the land was part of the Kemp purchase from the then iwi, and was done so as part of the treaty settlement. So that's the properties in question. All the land that sits to the western horizon is ONL. It's outstanding natural landscape, and the predominant land use is pastoral farming, conservation, and small pockets of tourism. So on Cattle Flat Station, that's the location. Originally, Treble Cone was on part of that property. Yeah. I'll hand over to Scott to run through the details of the submission and some of the concerns that we would like to raise.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So in the Wanaka Basin, all of the properties have been through tenure review, with the exception of, starting on Lake Hawea, Hunter Valley Station has not been through tenure review. In the Makarora catchment, Mount Albert Station has not been through tenure review. Minaret Station has not been through tenure review. And then in the Mutooki, only Mutooki station has not been through tenure review. There's still a couple in the Cadrona Valley, but the bulk have. Most of the properties that haven't been through tenure review did go through a retirement scheme in the 70s, the conservation land development schemes that went through. Yeah.
Before you go on, I think I got the wrong steer about Cattle Flat Station. Could you point out where that is? You said it was part of...
Correct. So Cattle Flat Station is on the true right of Mutooki River, and it basically, the Treble Cone Road climbs through the middle of it.
Gotcha.
And then it finishes at about 4,000 feet. So the actual Treble Cone ski area is no longer part of the property.
So just to cover off a few other properties, Mr. Wallace has covered the High Country Farms in the West Wanaka area. The submission of Eco Sustainability Development Limited relates specifically to Emerald Bluffs, which is also in the West Wanaka area.
That's Mr. Bay's operations.
It is, yes. And also in the West Wanaka area, there is the Chapman property, which is on Royce Peninsula.
Say again?
The Chapman property, which is on Royce Peninsula. Run 505, their submission relates to a property at James Road in the Cadrona Valley. So each of the submissions includes a... plan showing the property and the respective wide open area if you need to refer back. Upper Clutha Transport Limited relates to a site at Church Road in Luggett.
Yes, we know about that one.
Yep.
Thank you.
The Jolly property is a residential property on Riverbank Road in Wanaka. The Muir property is a farm to the east of the Hawea Township. Zozzi Limited is it used to include a house that burnt down. So it's a residential property just to the west of the Red Bridge in Luggett. So it's adjacent to the river. The burden submission relates to Mount Burke Station, which is to the west of Lake Hawea. The Gordon submission relates to Run 505. I think that's all of the submitters. So I have a summary of my evidence, which I can pass around. My evidence has been prepared on behalf of a number of rural submitters and addresses a range of concerns, including the identification and mapping of Wahi Tupuna areas and the provisions relating to earthworks, farm buildings and setbacks from water bodies. I consider that the absence of a clear and transparent methodology for the identification of Wahi Tupuna areas and apparent anomalies in the Wahi Tupuna mapping has resulted in a significant degree of concern and uncertainty for affected landowners and that insufficient information has been provided to allow for a fair and balanced assessment of the efficiency and effectiveness of the Wāhi Tupuna provisions and the scale and significance of the effects resulting from their implementation. I consider that the broad mapping of Wāhi Tupuna areas does not give effect to Objective 5.4.5 and Policy 5.4.5.1 of Chapter 5 of the proposed District Plan, which seeks to ensure that Wāhi Tupuna and all her components are mapped and appropriately managed and protected. I consider that more detailed mapping of Wāhi Tupuna areas and their component parts would allow Council and plan users to better understand the values of the Wāhi Tupuna areas and assist in drafting more efficient and effective rules. I consider the descriptions of the Wāhi Tupuna areas provided by Mr. Ellison are helpful and will assist Council in plan users in better understanding their significance. With regard to the earthworks rules, I consider that the recommended amendments to Rule 25.511 put forward by Mr. Bathgate go some way to addressing the concerns of submitters. However, I consider that further amendments, as set out in my evidence, are required to provide for earthworks associated with buildings, access, servicing and landscaping within approved building platforms. In addition, I consider that an amendment to provide for earthworks within Wāhi Tupuna Area 11, and I should correct my evidence, I refer to Wāhi Tupuna Area 10 and Wāhi Tupuna Area 12, but it's actually Area 11, where the elevation of the valley floor is greater than 400 metres above sea level would be appropriate. That is. Yes, correct. I do not support the further amendments recommended by Ms. Pickard, which remove the consent triggers, being earthworks in proximity to water bodies at an elevation exceeding 400 metres above sea level, or that modify a skyline or terrace edge from Rule 25.5.11 and places them in a new performance standard, 25.5.22, as this removes the 10 cubic metre threshold for permitted earthworks that would otherwise apply. I prefer Mr. Bathgate's recommended Rule 25.5.11 with my recommended amendments in this regard. Further, upon reflection, I consider that the recommended consent trigger relating to earthworks that modify a skyline or terrace edge is somewhat vague, and it is unclear how landowners would satisfy themselves and or council that earthworks in proximity to a potentially visible skyline or terrace edge do not trigger a consent. I consider that this is an example of where more detailed Wāhi Tupuna mapping would assist in drafting of rules that protect key skylines and terrace edges while being more practical for council and plan users. With regard to the rules relating to farm buildings, I generally support the further amendments recommended by Ms. Pickard in that identify new farm buildings within 30 metres of an existing farm building as a permitted activity, with the elevation limit and the consent trigger relating to modification of skylines and terrace edges being separated out into performance standards. I consider, however, that farming activities could be better enabled and provided for if Ms. Picard's recommended Rule 39.4.1 was amended to read as follows: the extension of an existing farm building or the construction of a new farm building within 30 metres of an existing farm building within an identified Wāhi Tupuna area. Further, I consider that Ms. Picard's recommended performance standard 39.5X should be amended as follows to provide for farm buildings within Wāhi Tupuna areas that are located on valley floors yet are at an elevation exceeding 400 metres above sea level, specifically Area 11. Would you like me to read that out? Or?
No, that's fine.
Yep. As with the earthworks rules, I consider that the consent trigger for farm buildings that modify a skyline or terrace edge will create difficulty and uncertainty for landowners and council in terms of determining whether a farm building is permitted or not, and could be improved in conjunction with more detailed Wahi Tuna mapping. With regard to the setback from water bodies, I consider that provision should be made for fencing and small structures in proximity to water bodies while retaining control over buildings. While I consider the recommended amendments to Rule 39.5.2 set out in my evidence are appropriate, I consider that Ms. Picard's recommended further amendments, which simply delete structures from the rule, achieves the intended outcome in a more concise manner, and therefore I support Ms. Picard's version of Rule 39.5.2.
Thank you, Mr. Edith. Starting with the Cabrera Valley, in your evidence, the Chief, you suggested an exemption for the floor of the valley. And I was going to ask you how you define the floor of the valley. And in your summary, you're suggesting taking a 600 MASL contour in that. And I wondered if that was a problem, because I've got the topo map open in front of me, and in effect at the Wanaka end of the valley, blowing state for the obvious, 600 MASL is a long way up from the valley floor, whereas at the township end, I think the township is is at 600. So I wonder if, well, in effect, I'm thinking a blanket 600 metre contour would be arguably adequate at the township end, but raising issues at the Wanaka end. And, have I got that wrong, and is there an alternative solution?
I don't think it creates that problem, because the Wahi Tupuna area follows the Cadrona River, so the Wahi Tupuna area is limited to the valley floor. At the Wanaka end, at an elevation of up to 600 metres above sea level.
I get what you mean.
Yep.
Yes, of course. Yes, the entrance to the valley, the Wahi Tupuna, doesn't even reach the 400 metre contour.
Correct. Yep.
Gotcha. The next question I had was, first of all, thank you for the mapping examples, whether they appear to be errors. Are there any of those errors, I said 30 errors, like the ones that have got holes in the middle of riverbeds, it's hard to think what else they could be.
Mm.
Your mind, are there any of those examples that you've pulled out that, if we corrected, wouldn't fall within the minor correction power in Clause 16?
I think. Oh, sorry. I think possibly a correction to the Wahetapuna area at Frankton, where I've identified that it follows cadastral boundaries. If that was realigned to not follow cadastral boundaries and potentially encroach into those properties, that may cause some difficulty. Although that might be a unmapped urban Wahetapuna anyway. So, I think other corrections would be relatively minor. Possibly figure 5, the Arrow River at Macetown. If that was aligned to follow what I take to be the river, the 200 metre width of the Wahetapuna may encroach onto land that, well, it's the land on either side of the river would be affected by, or would be subject to Wahetapuna overlays to the north and south, so perhaps it's not too much of a problem.
What's up there? Is the
I don't know, to be honest. There's not a great deal up there other than a high country farm.
Rocks and rabbits.
Yeah. So I don't see there being a huge problem with making minor corrections to the mapping. Yes, I think it helps, providing a description of the Wahetapuna areas. I think certainly elements such as ridgelines and terrace edges could be mapped, and as I outlined in my summary, I think that would assist with the drafting of some of the rules that could relate to specific or identified ridge lines and terrace edges. Refining the through further assessment and mapping. Yes, correct.
Thank you. sort of enough to give you a scheme when you were assessing an application or report for a client that things were clear enough?
The values are the values set out in the schedule give us an indication of what might be there. They don't provide any direction in terms of where those values may be located within a wide finite area, or areas that may be particularly sensitive. Taking the Minaret Station and West Wanaka Station, the Wahitupuna area covers a large area. So they're not detailed to the extent that I would be able to provide any advice in terms of likely issues that may arise, other than possibly, other than buildings or earthworks in relation to a skyline or a terrace edge.
So probably what you understand would be somewhat general in terms of spatial identification within the way. Asking the question slightly differently, are you satisfied that if it's a value that's not specified, you're likely that in terms of doing an assessment or evaluation, you wouldn't need to consider anything else, you might be looking at the values that have been identified? Is that what I'm trying to get is a number of parties, you know, while they've raised board concerns, they're looking at some greater certainty about what would need to be taken into account. So really the question is, how certain could these become, or should they be, or given that they're such big areas, that it's unlikely that every single value can be specifically identified into effectively a pinpoint area.
Yes, I appreciate that it would be difficult to identify everything and to show everything on a map, and it may not be appropriate to do so. But certainly some further direction through the mapping would be helpful. I think the setback is 7 meters from water bodies.
And is it 10 cubic meters?
Any earthworks within.
Any earthworks within 7 cubic meters.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Thousands
of
the limit normally.
Yes.
Yep. So any earthworks within 7 meters would require a consent normally, and this would extend it to 20.
Yes. Yes.
With the consented building platforms, and you're suggesting, and so have other people, that earthworks within consented building platforms be excluded from these rules. You know, at what point in the history of this plan would consented building platforms have been assessed in terms of their effects on Manawhenua cultural values generally?
I would.
Is that a common? I mean, you must have you made applications that
include. Yes. Yeah.
Over the years, been assessed or only more recently?
It's not something that is assessed, but the vast majority, I'd say, you know, 99-95% of building platforms in the rural zone have been publicly notified, and through that process notice has been served on various iwi groups as standard. So
do you know how long that's been?
I'm not aware, no.
What's been the status of those building platforms, like the activity status?
Discretionary?
Full discretionary.
Yes.
As part of the subdivision application?
Yes, or as a land use consent, yeah. Yeah.
So that and how that works?
Yeah, so I might just turn to. So the removal of those consent triggers from the rule leaves the what I take to be the most sensitive Wahitupuna areas in a standalone rule. Which has a permitted earthworks limit of 10 cubic metres.
So where the 10 cubic metres comes in a along with the other cubic metres, where the rule that picks up that cubic metre limit, is it a standard or a activity status? No, I'm not.
Sorry, I'm just trying to find them. Yeah, so there's a rule that sits ahead of table. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. 25.2, which specifies that. Earthworks that exceed the volume set out in Table 25.2 are, I believe, discretionary. Those limits are performance standards, in a sense. So then following on from that, the separating out of the consent triggers into a separate performance standard means that any earthworks within 20 metres of a water body or above 400 metres above sea level or that modify a skyline would be restricted discretionary. Not over and above, because those triggers, the setback from water bodies, elevation and skylines, wouldn't apply to the more sensitive Waitapunas identified in...
But it would to the general Waitapuna.
Yes.
The issue, just back up on the commissioner's question, is the issue that Ms. Pickard's suggested amendment has under the column label maximum total volume RD, which is manifestly not a maximum total volume.
Mm. Yeah, correct.
If there were a 25.5, 22.3 that
Yep. Or it could be added at the start, any earthworks in excess of 10 cubic metres.
Well, yeah, yeah, do it. Yep. But if it's specified in the body of the standard.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, as I say, alter the column so it's the non-compliance.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm happy that either of you to answer these questions if it's suitable. Initially, I'm quite interested in the tenure review processes, I suppose, in that of those sites that have been through tenure review or have commenced a tenure review process, are you aware of an assessment of Manawatu values or consultation with the Runaka to identify those values at that time?
It is a it's a statutory component of tenure review. However, the level of engagement has varied from tenure review to tenure review, and I'm sympathetic to the Runanga in that sense. But it is definitely a core element of tenure review is to assess the cultural values of a property. If I may, just at this point, perhaps provide some context around the mapping. So, there's essentially two main maps for the Wanaka area, and they were both produced in the late 1800s. Cultural, well, looking back, it's the context of cultural values. Really, the purpose was of those maps was to ensure that what was largely handed down from generation to generation by stories and by speaking within families within Runanga was actually recorded in some way. And so we're very, very fortunate that those place names and those stories were recorded. Without those initiatives at that time, much of that would be lost. And so I have the copies of the two maps here because for our family, we're tremendously proud of that part of that history. And it's not something that's necessarily recorded or readily available, notwithstanding that you want to go and spend a few months in the Hokkien. But Ngāi Tahu has recently initiated the cultural mapping project for this very reason. And it does identify some sites that are culturally very significant. That doesn't mean necessarily that the area is not significant in the fact that there were Maori did use this area for food gathering, and there were certain areas where they resided, for instance, at the Neck. I don't know if you've ever seen the photos of the settlement at the Neck. It was huge, the people that lived there. And I think that had there been a process that we're talking about at the moment before the lake was raised, it would have had an impact on what it is that they were doing and how they were doing it, because that township was essentially flooded. There used to be a lake at the Neck, a small lake, and when it was raised, it was lost. The reason I draw attention to the mapping and to the fact that we don't want to lose it is that the Tangata Whenua chapter sets out the strategic intent. The difficulty of when you apply a strategic intent to a mapping project, which is the chapter that in question at the moment, is that you take a broad intent and it has a significant effect on areas within that. And for us, it's essentially our entire working farm. And I guess the point I want to make with you is that I feel it is part of our rich cultural history, as is the 170 years of pastoralism. But we're fortunate with the pastoralism is that it's slightly better known. But that doesn't mean it's any more important. So I just sort of look at it and think, well, are we not better to the, and the points that were picked up in the earlier discussions with Scott, are we not better to pick up areas of specific interest? Because that's really what we need to know. Because, you know, to sort of put this these broad areas over, that's largely dealt with by the strategic intent in the Tangata Whenua chapter. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose that's part of what I'm asking is that you think the information that is available, both from the maps that you indicated, the assessments that are undertaken through tenure review, and also through the knowledge that you're aware of, to make more specific provisions?
I think there is the capability to that. But I am respectful of the fact that some of these sites, it's not contradictory to say that that some of these sites should be known but not identified. For instance, burial sites and things like that. You know, it's tremendously important that if there are any, that they're known for the purposes of keeping them intact and protecting them. But there is the risk that if they become publicly available, public knowledge, that some with perhaps less considerate views might disrespect those sites. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
And so with regard to your tourism operation, do you, I suppose, tell these stories and sort of understand these stories to your clients?
We do, but we're limited to the fact that for Minaret and for West Wanaka through to Cattle Flat, which is why we submitted together, if you like, is that in reality most of the cultural values, the stories, relate to passing through. So from one generation to the next, they would identify where metamorphic rocks sit amongst schist rocks. Why? Because metamorphic rocks are good for cooking stones. Where cabbage tree roots are, where tuna or the eels are, the food sources. It was all built around sustenance. And so that is likely to extend district-wide. So I don't think that necessarily suits being specific sites because cabbage trees covered vast swaths of the countryside, but there will be sites which are specific. Yeah.
And which if we take that view of the world, that some of these are about stories, about journeys through the landscape,
yeah.
Things like that. Do the activities that are captured by these rules, you know, and so the ones that affect your farming activities, do you think they compromise the value of those stories?
I don't. I think that land use inevitably is about change. I suspect that commissioners' hearings have been going on for a long time. I suspect they'll go on for a long time ahead of us, and that reflects change. But what's important, in my view, is that we don't lose those stories, and which puts the importance of the Tangata Whenua chapter as an overarching, if you like. But if there are sites that need further protection, absolutely. But
there's a distinction there between cultural sites and cultural stories, I suppose.
I think there is, but I'm respectful of of the view of Iwi on that.
Just one other question, and I appreciate that input. It's good discussion. With regard to the 400 metre contour, in your experience through that area, does the 400 metre line actually represent anything, any change in landscape, or is it sort of,
I think that typically contour lines from a pastoral farming perspective, contour lines do often demark land capability or land class, because the further you move up the slope. But we're in a glacial terrain, and so it can be a huge variation. I think again, it's you know, when you start putting arbitrary lines on maps, it does start to have, inevitably, you start to cross from, you know, cross through areas. You're not moving far up the hill at 400 metres, but it just, I guess I would prefer to see then, rather than large areas, specific sites. Yeah.
And going back to that discussion we had about the stories, how do you identify and protect or make provisions around those journeys or the corridors as opposed to specific sites?
Well, for instance, the earthworks one, you know, you can deal with the earthworks on the basis that provisions. For instance, the Historic Places Trust provision. What's that one?
The accidental discovery.
Yeah, the archaeological discovery. You know, if you do find something, then it is a case of notifying the authority or the likes. We never have, you know, and I don't mean we've never notified anyone. I mean we've never found anything. But there will be sites where there's more likely to find things than others. Yeah.
And just one last question. Are you aware of specifics? Have you got cultural sites on your properties?
So we commissioned a cultural values report for Minarets, and there aren't any specific of significant cultural value as such, for instance, a pass site or a burial site. But inevitably, because there's a food source over there, there will be middens and there will be areas that they stopped off on. But I'm not the one to necessarily ask about that. But I guess the point is that we have taken the initiative to discover things that are on our own initiative, rather than, and it reflects, it is reflective certainly on the joint submission of the views that we have, and hopefully that came through in that submission, that we support the recognition of the cultural values. It's just more on a site-specific basis. Yeah.
You didn't consider submitting that report as evidence?
I have to be very careful, actually. I have it here, and I did consider it. The problem with it is that it ultimately the information in it is not mine, and that's something it's Ngāi Tahu, and whilst most of it can be sourced through the cultural mapping project, the interpretation of place names and things can't, and so certainly Takari Norton, who's based in Christchurch, put it together. I could certainly ask to have that. Yeah.
The other hand, I should note that we do have the capacity, I can make orders that if you provide it, it's not publicly available on the website. So can I suggest that you talk to Ngāi Tahu about that?
Yep.
And if between you think it's appropriate, then perhaps
Just to go back to your question about tenure review, I should note that West Warwick Station has been through tenure review, and no values or sites of significance were identified. I think Iwi visited the site and flew over the site on two occasions. And Castle Flat Station has also gone through tenure review, and two sites were identified on Castle Flat Station with covenants being registered over them.
And I suppose likewise, if there's reports that were included in those tenure review processes that you have access to, you might consider
them submit. Yep. Yeah, and Minaret were the same. We're in the process of tenure review, and so we have had Iwi have visited on two occasions, and there is a cultural report, and there was no it was recognised that the Maori had moved through the area, but there were no significant cultural sites that were recognised.
Can I just clarify the cultural values report that you've recognised? Was that commissioned as part of the tenure review?
No, because the what we were really interested in was seeing the mapping and understanding it for the area as well. So understanding, it was a pretty inhospitable place, the area in those days. And so it was interesting for us to see, and there was no, we weren't part of a greenstone trail or the like. So there was a known trail on the other side of the lake that went through, largely follows where the road is and things. Yeah. They're in the the first one was supplied by Rowery, and it's in the Archives New Zealand store, and the second one, the provenance is not known, but it's known to be, it's referred to as the 1880 Mahinga Kai map, and it was talked about land south of the Waitaki and areas of food. And it's perhaps useful for me to, the first one, which was drawn up by the district surveyor, Thomas Broderick, perhaps there's a wee excerpt here which I might just read to you as to why it was created. In 1896, the district surveyor Thomas Broderick was directed to secure the native names of the mountains, rivers and passes in South Canterbury. After several visits to Arawhenua, Broderick was referred to Rāwhiti at Waiheo. Although Tamari was bedridden during Broderick's visit in September 1898, he became very talkative, with his son Henare acting as interpreter and granddaughter Kitty recording the names. He provided over 150 place names from Lake Wanaka to Rakaia. Although he was nearly 90 years old at the time, his memories of the names and knowledge of the localities were very clear. Broderick later remarked that it was quite apparent that he knew exactly what he was talking about, and he was able to describe many of the geographical features in such a manner that he recognised them at once from the descriptions.
Nature of the process, was it looking for actual cultural sites? We've got evidence from Nelson that the nature of Wayne to Perna is a more broad scale than just the point that Mr. Wallace is making. So was the tenure review process looking to identify specific sites or include these broad scale issues that
It's a little bit of both, actually. So the tenure review process is a voluntary process between the Commissioner of Crown Lands and the lessee, but it involves consultation with including iwi, fish and game, the Department of Conservation. And so it does look for specific sites that through the 10-year review should be further protected. So it is looking for specific sites. But the cultural values report also takes into account a wider context of the land and how it was used and the appropriateness of how it might be changed in the future.
And going back to the question Mr. Meek was asked about building platforms and the fact that they were publicly notified, you've obviously got a broad experience planning in this area. How often in practice were cultural values raised as an issue, either by applicant or by
submitter? There are no instances that spring to mind where cultural values were raised by council, the applicant, or a submitter for, on applications for building platforms or subdivision. More recently, since the notification of stage three, there have been discussions at hearings, but yeah, before that, I can't think of any instance where it's been raised.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baker.
Just further context to that is that as a pastoral lease, the land of which West Wanaka was and Cattle Flat was and Minaret is, cultural values comes into the discretionary actions consent, which is all earthworks and parts of the of buildings. And so it's always been a part of that process. Yeah, and we've never had anything that has been turned down or modified because of the cultural values in our areas. So that it's not something new for us. Yeah.
Any more for any more team? Thank you very much for speaking, Mr. Wallace, and the team supporters. I appreciate you coming to see us, and thank you for your input and for our consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next submitter on the list is Chris Barker.
Do I sit here? I have to resume.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
thank you.
And,
a bit warmer in here. Righto. Where do I start? Have you get the information? Have you got a microphone stand? Yeah, okay.
Picture yourself on the talent quiz.
I'd fail. Right. Have you seen the submission? Have you got it in front of you? Yeah. Can we have the prescribed area put up in front on the map, please? Well, it's the Patariki and Timaru Site 2 Eastern Arm. So if you go to just Lake Hawea urban area. Fun with GIS.
So your submission is not just about your own property, it's about...
It's about an extension of this area too into the Lake Hawea urban area, which we'll get to in a sec. Placo is a big thing on the right, yeah. If you go down the bottom, see the red thing? Yeah, that's it. Keep zooming in. Keep zooming in. Basically, I'm concerned with this bit of mapping that goes into the Lake Hawea Township. If we can pull that across, that's... And zoom in on that section, which is the western edge, yeah. So there's a large zone, which is zone area 2, which is Katariki and Timaru side 2 eastern. And there's a western and eastern arm. And in the description of this area, in the actual in the PDB3, whatever it's called, for this particular area, it says that the urbanised area of Hawea within the Swahi Tapuna has been removed from the map due to its extensive modification, whereas that map shows it going into Lake Hawea Township. So the two statements the map and the statement don't agree. This came to my attention when I attended the Lake Hawea community session. And I submitted my objection the weekend after that because the closing date was the Monday. So essentially, that's my query, that the urban area of Lake Hawea shouldn't be included in this area as mapped. So the mapping seems to be wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Margaret. The one thing that's happened since you lodged your submission is the Runaka have suggested and the council officer has agreed that there should be a general exclusion, it's subject to particular signs, but there should be a general exclusion for anything that is any land that has an urban zoning, which includes settlement, any of the residential zones.
Well, I had a quick look through that. Last week I went back online and had a look through everything I could find. I see that there's been submissions by Mr. Bathgate.
Yeah.
And also Ellison. So Mr. Bathgate kind of says that, as I understand what he's saying, is that there's going to be desire to exclude some of the earthwork provisions from these areas, but he still wants it included. That's how I read it. And I saw Mr. So that was 46 to 48 in Mr. Bathgate's stuff. And Mr. Ellison, 45 to 47. Mr. Ellison's in 45 to 47 is talking about areas of urban, and he's proposing creating some urban Wahi Tapuna here. But the three sites he's talking about, the wider Wanaka area around central Queenstown and Frankton, which doesn't seem to include that at all. So I don't really. I'm just basically here to support the Lake Hawea Association application, which was done Hayley Mahon, 19th of June, where they also, items 27 to 29, propose that there's no reason to have this particular area, shaded area, included, because it seems to counteract the statement. And also Patterson Pitts, which is evidence of Duncan White and Michael Botting, 4.2. They've come up with various, the Patterson Pitt guys have come up with various anomalies that they think are in error, essentially. And they've come at exactly the same area.
Yes, so we'll be hearing from both the HCA and from Patterson Pitts this afternoon.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a question of, as it was a Thursday when I was made aware of this to my great extent, and then but the closing date was the Monday, so I just thought I'd put something in. I wasn't sure what anybody else was going to do at this stage, so. I mean, there's a lot more argument saying that there is no, there is the Maori, sorry, the Kaitaha who have got the their cultural mapping application, which they pointed us towards when on the Thursday at the meeting. And there's nothing in this particular area that's relevant. There's no sites on the top of the glacial moraine there. I can't see why they would want to include this area. When there is areas within Wanaka which have cultural significance but haven't been included in their mapping. So, but, you know, we could go around in circles and tick all the boxes, but the bottom line seems to be that the statement they have within section 2 for the Petariki and Timaru site, eastern arm, doesn't comply with what is on the map.
Okay, okay.
Any
questions? No, I think
it's got to be clear. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's very clear. Thank you very much for coming along to see us. So we appreciate you taking the time to come and see us and to point out your concern. And so we'll have I suspect, a more extended discussion. Both HCA and Patterson Bits, and indeed the Rudaka when they appear next week.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.